You're busy and you want the best for your kids. We're here to help. This is Hope and Will, a parenting podcast from Children's Healthcare of Atlanta.
You're out running errands with your family when you notice your child watching someone across the room, and you recognize the person has special needs and can tell that your child is brimming with questions. Maybe you tense. You're anticipating your child, no matter how innocently, blurting out a question or comment. Or maybe this setting is more intimate. Perhaps your child shares a classroom with a child who uses a wheelchair or a communication device. They don't ask about it at school, but at home, they've got lots of questions for you. Even in a more private setting, you might second guess yourself as you try and provide guidance on how your child can be a good friend to their classmate. Today, we have the honor of being joined by three incredible guests who are raising children with special needs. Together, they're going to help us better understand what life is like for their families and provide insight to help other parents harness their kids' natural curiosity and turn it into positive actions. They'll share examples of big and little gestures that go a long way to help their kids feel loved and accepted. We'll hear from Jen, whose 10-year-old son Wyatt has dwarfism, and Nicole, whose 12-year-old daughter Ruby has Down syndrome. We're also going to hear from Neil, whose 8-year-old son Jack has autism and communicates through a communication device. By the end of this episode, we hope you'll feel empowered to initiate more meaningful interactions with people with different abilities, and for you to be armed with insights that help your kids do the same. This conversation is a powerful reminder of the good that happens when people feel seen and not ignored. But before we dive into that conversation, we're kicking things off with a special message from someone familiar with what we'll hear today.
Hello, I am Dale Spivey, and I am definitely someone who remembers what life was like to grow up in a world where I stood out in a crowd. I was born with a genetic disability. In both my legs, I was missing bones. It was passed through my father's side of the family, so I'm a double amputee. For today's conversation, I wanted to share with you a little bit about my amputations. I was 1.5 and 2 when they occurred. My parents, no matter where we lived, in which state or anywhere, they always drove me back to Children's so that I could have that support. The parents today that you're going to hear from that are wonderful advocates, Jen, Nicole, and Neil, are much like my parents were, very intentional on wanting to advocate for their children. I love to advocate for children as well. And one thing I do is I share stories about my own childhood that taught me lessons. And the story I'd like to share with you today is my ice skating story. This story happened when I was around 8 years old. There was a mall that had an ice skating ring in the middle of the mall, and I loved to ice skate. My ankles never got tired. I could go all day. And on this one day, this little girl came out in a pink tutu, and she comes out into the middle of the ring, and she is spinning around, and I'm like, oh, I can do that. I can so do that. So when she leaves the middle of the ring, I go out to the middle of the ring and I'm yelling, hey, mom, watch this. And I say it over and over again until I get my parents' eyes. And once I have those eyes on me, I push as hard as I can with my right foot. I pushed as hard as I could and I spun around, but my leg did not. My left leg was in that ice very good. And I spun around and my foot was on backwards. And that day, I happened to be wearing blue jeans, so I don't believe people that were witnessing this realized that my legs were not real, and my foot was now on backwards, so you could have heard a pin drop. Well, the owner of the ring looks over at me. My mom starts yelling, just turn her foot around and stand her back up. Not once, but like 3 or 4 times. I love to share this story because I felt like in this moment, my parents were being so wonderful. The message they gave me was, all you got to do when you fall down is turn your foot around and stand back up. Keep going. Don't stop. As a child with a disability, it was a great message to have because there were a lot of hard times and there were a lot of falls. But knowing all I needed to do was turn my foot around and get back up and I could keep going and reach for my dreams was an awesome thing that my parents taught me. Today, I have been married now for 31 years. I'm a school social worker and I love to advocate for children. I have two adult children now of my own. I am hoping to be a walking, talking testament to the good that comes when a community comes together to help every one of its members feel supported, accepted, and a part of the pack.
I am now honored to welcome Jen, Nicole, and Neil to this show. Hi, everyone. And before we dive into our conversation, I just want to pause to acknowledge that if we had unlimited time, we would have dozens of parents on this panel today. And while the dialogue aims to offer helpful insight, we know that every situation, every diagnosis, and every family is different. Nothing is one size fits all. Though we do hope you walk away with insights you can apply in a way that makes sense for you. Okay, with that said, I want to start off by learning a little bit more about each guest and their family. So Jen, let's start with you. Can you tell us about your family and your son, Wyatt?
Sure, yeah. My son, Wyatt, is 10 years old. We found out about his diagnosis back when I was pregnant. My husband and I tried for years and years to get pregnant and had to go through lots of IVF before we finally got pregnant with Wyatt. And it was towards the beginning of the pregnancy that he was measuring very small. And so through a lot more testing and everything, we found out that he had a form of skeletal dysplasia called spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia. And he was just very small. So an uneventful pregnancy after that. And then he was born and we spent about a week in the hospital and he has done well. He has many different challenges. His vision is limited, so he wears glasses. He got his first pair of glasses at 4 months old. He had some neck issues. He wore a neck brace for the first 4 years of his life before he was finally fused when he was 4 years old. He has some hearing issues, so he wears bilateral hearing aids. And has some issues with his back. So he wears a scoliosis back brace at night to sleep. So right now we're also starting to have some mobility issues. So he now drives a scooter around the school and places where he has long distances to go. So the Atlanta airport, zoo, things like that, we now have a scooter that he rides around. So that's our newest way to get attention.
And how old's Wyatt now?
He's in fourth grade and is very, very smart and loved and doing very well.
We can't wait to hear more about him. Nicole, how about Ruby?
So Ruby has two older siblings that are in college. She came along when they were both in elementary school. Uneventful pregnancy. And we found out hours after her birth that she had three copies of the 21st chromosome, which means she has Down syndrome. We did not expect that and we didn't know anything about it. So we've been learning along with her as she's grown. She's now 12 years old and in middle school. But her life has definitely been filled with some things that were different than her siblings. We've done speech therapy and physical therapy, occupational therapy. She's worn glasses for most of her life as well. We've had foot braces, regular braces on her teeth, a little bit of everything here and there. She's been a great tour guide for us as we've navigated it.
And Neil, how about Jack? Can you tell us about Jack?
Yeah. Hey, my son Jack is 8. He has ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder, level 3. When he was young, he just wasn't hitting the same milestones as other kids, typical kids. We started to go down the road with therapists and we were in a program called Babies Can't Wait. We got a diagnosis through the Marcus Autism Center when he was just 2. Early diagnosis and intervention is really helpful with any special needs kid. And so that was our path. That was our journey. When we heard that news, it was pretty difficult. You always want your kid just to be happy and typical and have an easy life. And when we first got it and learned about it, it was difficult. But as the years gone by, it's been our journey and it's our normal. But he wasn't crawling. When he was younger, he had a walker. For folks on the spectrum, a lot of times it's hard for their brain to take in all these other outside things. And so it just took him a little bit longer. He has an augmented talker. A device. So essentially it looks like an iPad. So he's non-speaking and yeah, he's just a joy. He's smart. His receptive language is great. He knows everything that's going on. Even when he doesn't look like he's totally focused, he's still with everybody in the room. He's a really happy kid. Like he's just joyful. You know, a lot of people could learn from him. He loves fruit. He loves to eat. He's not a picky eater. He loves books. He loves live music. We're a live music family. a music family. So he's always had, even when he was in a crib, music. So he likes that a lot. Yeah, he's a great kid and he's the joy of our life.
That's beautiful. And you know, so many listeners right now are listening to this and they want to do a better job of making life maybe brighter, easier for families like all of you. So I'd love for you each to share an experience that you've had with somebody in your community that really left a positive mark on your child and also you, so that we can know what are some of the things we can do that make things brighter for you.
So Ruby has been in a typical classroom throughout her entire elementary school years, which can be kind of scary as a parent with a child with special needs. You don't know how that's going to work. And we've been very fortunate to have found some great peers along the way that have become more than just peers, but friends that really look out for Ruby in all areas at school, and not just to take care of her, but to connect with her and be friends with her. We've had these girls come over to our house to hang out with her. We've gone to elementary school dances together, and it's really made a difference. And the difference I see between those kids and maybe the kids that kind of avoid her is just that they just come up and approach her, and like she's one of them, because she is at the end of the day. She might look a little different. She definitely talks different. They realize like, yeah, but you're a kid just like I am. And they find that common ground. And that's really made a big difference for us.
How about you, Neil?
We're lucky to have a preschool and a daycare that had an inclusive program. So we had him around a lot of typical kids, especially pre-K. There were a lot. There were like 20, 30 kids in there. And it was nice to see a lot of those kids that would help him. But he'd also have support there. We were zoned for a public school, but they just didn't have the support. So now we're going down the road, at least at this stage, in a private school. So we kind of miss having him in that typical setting like Ruby. Maybe when he gets to middle school, he might be ready for that. That was something that was really helpful for us as young parents, or new parents, I should say.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that makes a big difference. Jen, how about you?
With Wyatt, we started him off at a private school as well. He's been there since kindergarten. And because he started there with this group of kids, they've all just taken care of him like he's just like everybody else. It doesn't even seem like extra effort when they carry his backpack for him or get something that he can't reach in the lunchroom or just require help reaching anything or lifting heavy things. They all just take care of him like he's one of them. It doesn't seem like people even think about it when they help him, which I love, which makes my heart happy, which gives me peace sending him to school, knowing that he's just thought of like everybody else, just one of the family, one of the school.
Loved and supported. That's all we want for our kids, right? And of course, we know every interaction's not positive. And I'd like to get an idea of some of the things that people do, or maybe it's something that they don't do and they don't have the outcome or impact they think that they're having. Nicole, has there been an instance you can point to?
We've been very fortunate to not have too many negative experiences so far. And I think part of that is because Ruby's not visually as different. She doesn't have any specific devices right now. Maybe when she was younger, probably in early elementary age. And I was with a group of moms and they were asking some appropriate questions about Ruby and her diagnosis. But when the time came for this particular woman, she did ask me, well, how old were you when you had her? And when I disclosed that I was 35, she was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, that tracks. That was just hard. And I understand that she didn't mean anything like by it. And I understand the stats, but I also, it wasn't helpful, I guess.
Jen?
Wyatt gets a lot of stares right now. And the older that he gets, the more noticeable his height is. So that's kind of one of the things that happens to us. We go out to restaurants. People ask him if he wants a booster seat or like a high chair. People talk to him using a baby voice or a younger voice because they think he's so much younger. Our biggest frustration right now is, you know, he's much older than his height. He looks mature in the face, but he's very smart. And so when people speak to him like he's a young child, that's kind of one of our biggest struggles right now.
Right. That somebody might not even be realizing that that's hurtful. And what are some of the best ways, Neil, would you say that children can initiate friendships with your kids? Maybe some examples of things that make your kids feel seen. Neil?
Yeah. So for us, we're similar. We're very lucky in our community and with our friends. One of the things when he meets a stranger, he has that talker, that device, which becomes kind of a way to break the ice. He can talk with them using that and they're interested. And then it opens the door for us to kind of explain, well, his brain maybe works just a little bit different than a typical kid, or why does he like that? A lot of parents and a lot of in schools that kind of teach a little bit more with inclusion, at least you hope. kids tend to be a little bit more open, right? They're not as closed off as adults. When they ask questions or they're curious, it's a good thing. It gives you the opportunity to have a conversation and then maybe become friends, right?
I love that you have a soccer buddy program. Will you tell us about that, where Jack benefits from this buddy program?
Yeah, in our community, there's a thing called Top Soccer where they get paired with a buddy. It's a pretty big league in Metro Atlanta. So I'm sure like some of the parents get their kids to do this, like, hey, you should volunteer. But all the kids have some sort of special need. My son is not real coordinated. It's hard for him to do kind of the fine motor stuff, but he loves to get out there. He likes to run. And so week to week, we're in it right now where some of the same kids come that are buddies with him. One kid is really great. He's a junior and a varsity soccer athlete. And come to find out, his brother's on the spectrum too, and he's in college right now, and he's super bright. But you always kind of find those stories. And then there's some younger kids too that have just really taken a liking to him. And it's great to see that these kids are so open to helping Jack and making sure he has a good time.
Yeah. And, you know, even if maybe there aren't programs like this, I love, Nicole, that you have a tradition that your family started where you read a book to Ruby's class each year. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So when she was in first grade, we decided to celebrate one of our holidays throughout the year with her class. So Ruby has Down syndrome, and that's the triplet of the 21st chromosome. So 321, March 21st, that's when we celebrate World Down Syndrome Day. So starting in first grade, we would bring mismatched socks, which is another whole story for her whole class. And my husband and I would go into the classroom and read a book to the class, usually about Down syndrome specifically, but it definitely covered just special needs in general. We found it was a really great way to kind of talk about the things that the kids have probably been thinking and, depending on their level of filter, may or may not have felt comfortable to ask either Ruby or the teacher or anybody else for that matter. Things like the shoes, that special shoes that she had to wear, or the glasses at that point that she had to wear, the way she talks, sometimes the way she runs, the fact that she couldn't tie her shoes at the same time as other kids. Just tackling some of the obstacles that she faces in a day and why that makes her sometimes look, sound, act differently than her peers. We've really enjoyed that because, again, it allowed the kids to ask questions. And sometimes the questions are off topic, but a lot of times we get some really heartfelt questions.
Jen, I know you have a video that Wyatt made for his classmates.
Yeah. Well, when he first started at the school in kindergarten, I don't think anybody had any experience with a child with dwarfism. So Wyatt read a book to his class about dwarfism, about understanding dwarfism. And his school did a great job and recorded that and showed it to every single class in the lower school. So every child was able to learn about Wyatt even before they saw him or met him. So it wasn't as much of a shock. Dwarfism Awareness Day is October 25th, and we did shirts. Choose kindness is what it says on the shirts. Everybody wears green as the color for dwarfism awareness, and wore t-shirts for his day.
And I want to better understand the day-to-day life, what it's like for families navigating special needs. So can you tell us, and Neil, we'll start with you, some of the things that have been most surprising for you on this journey?
Parenting is hard, no matter what. So I guess surprisingly to me, it's like, it's our new normal, right? We love this kid. This is how we have to work and juggle everything with therapy, school. For those of you in public school, the IEP process, all of that stuff. We don't need extra sympathy as a parent of a kid with special needs. We just want to maybe be validated that we're all in this together. And parenting is a tough road and it's a challenge, but it's also one of the most joyous things that life can offer.
And rewarding as well. Nicole, I bet that there are some things that have come up that have surprised you on this journey. Can you think of something?
Yeah, much like Neil said, I did not realize how many therapies or in the beginning doctor's appointments would be involved with Ruby. So that has definitely been a shock. Instead of as many sports or music classes as my other kids did, we've done more therapies instead. Still the same amount of money and time going out there for sure, but just put in a different area. I think one of the biggest surprises is how typical or normal our schedule is. Like Neil said, it's our new normal, if you will. But even when we had the big kids still in the house, it still felt just like it was when they were younger and Ruby was younger. We were still doing the same types of things. We were still going to school. We were still playing outside with friends. It just, again, some of the resources are allocated a little bit differently. Some of the time spent with our kids are maybe intentional in different ways because of the things we've learned from therapies. My kids used to joke that Ruby never got any downtime. And I'm like, oh, no, no. I always made games out of it. So our speech games and our physical therapy games, it was always just games, but they were intentional. But at the end of the day, it was like Neil said, parenting is hard no matter where you are. So that's been the most surprising, is that it's more normal than I thought.
And for those that are tuning in because they're embarking on their own journey of raising a child with special needs, what would be, Jen, I'll start with you, the number one piece of advice that you would want to share with them as they begin this journey?
For us, it was really helpful early on to find community, to find support, to reach out to other, either parents of little people or other adult little people, to figure out the best ways to advocate for him, to know what to ask for, to know things that are appropriate to ask for, what kind of therapies we needed, finding the support within our local community and even within the greater community. There's a Little People of America network, which is national, and they have gatherings throughout the year. And that was really helpful for us to just learn more about life with dwarfism. And then one other piece of advice I would give to any parent of a child with special needs is don't be afraid to advocate for your child. Don't be afraid to ask for multiple opinions on medical things. Don't be afraid to ask for different therapists. You have to be your child's biggest advocate, especially as they're younger. We are now advocating for Wyatt getting to take his scooter into certain places. We've been denied certain places. We're trying to teach Wyatt how to advocate for himself and how to speak up for himself. But that's a process we've had to learn over these last 10 years. So finding your community and learning to speak up for your child would be the number one piece of advice I could give to new families.
Nicole, can you tell us about Welcome to Holland, a short story that really impacted you?
Sure. So there's an essay called Welcome to Holland. And if you're somebody who's in the special needs community, you've likely heard it before. But if not, just to summarize, it describes when you're pregnant as being preparing for a trip to Italy. Your whole life, you've wanted to go to Italy, you've been excited about it, and now is the time. So you prepare by learning the language and making reservations to see all the sights, the Michelangelo, dreaming about the Colosseum, all of the fun stuff. The big day arrives, you get on the plane, a couple hours later, you land, and they say, here we are, welcome to Holland. You rush up, you're asking them like, wait a minute, I think you have a mistake. This is not what I planned for. I'm going to Italy. And they're like, nope, we're in Holland now, and this is where we're going to stay. So you get off the plane, you walk around, you're confused, your clothes are all wrong, you don't have any reservations set up yet. But over the next couple of weeks or a couple of days, depending on how you look at it, you learn like, okay, there's a lot of really cool stuff here. And I got to pick up some new guidebooks and learn some new things. But Holland's pretty cool. They have, you know, windmills and they even have tulips. It's gorgeous. So the big takeaway is if you spend your whole trip mourning that you weren't in Italy, you would never see the beauty of Holland. So for all of us that planned on Italy and all of a sudden we're rerouted to Holland, it's just been a great reminder that there's a lot of great stuff about where we are. We just have to remember to take it all in. Every diagnosis is different, but I know for ours, the gifts it has given our family, our friends, I wouldn't have it any other way.
It's really a beautiful way to reframe the initial reaction to what it is that you're experiencing. And Neil, so much of this conversation has focused on how people can better help your kids. But what about you? How can we support you as parents, friends, extended family, in ways that you've seen that that support has really added to the benefit of your lives?
I think at the beginning, when you first find out your child's special needs, it's a lot tougher. But as you get to move on and learn what it's like to have a kid with special needs, it becomes a lot easier. When we first started at this daycare, one of the parents came up to me and asked me some questions. He also alluded to like, well, you know, what are you going to do when he's older? Because that's a big fear. That kind of triggered me. And then I went home and I was talking to my wife and I was like, you know what? I need to turn this around and think about this a different way. He was one of the few parents that was curious and asked me and wanted to know. You don't see kids like Wyatt or kids like Ruby all the time. And for us, we never knew a kid that was non-speaking that would have an AAC device. It's a new world for us, let alone other parents. For families with special needs or even folks that are curious, talk to one another, learn about each other. It really turned a page for me, I think, as a dad. He was one of the few people that really was interested.
Jen, you know, Neil brings up a really good point that people might think that they are making you feel better by maybe looking the other way so that they don't feel like they're staring or something like that. But I would imagine that's so very painful. And instead, how would you want people to handle their first meeting with Wyatt, for example?
I think trying to intentionally avoid him because you're worried about offending somebody or you're worried you're looking too long, I think that's the wrong way to go about it. Wyatt's just like everybody else. You could probably learn a lot from Wyatt if you just gave him a few minutes. Including him like you would include any other child in any kind of activity would go a long way to help families feel supported, to help Wyatt feel included. He's just like every other kid. He's just a little smaller.
And Nicole, do you prefer people ask about Ruby's therapies and progress, or do you just prefer that people focus on the normal, quote unquote, aspects of life?
I'm an open book, so I love it when someone asks about a therapy and I do my best to not drone on and on about it. Everybody has something going on in their life, whether it's a diagnosis or an illness. Same thing. Check in with me, but we don't have to talk about that all the time. It's okay.
I'm curious, you know, I've got two little boys, and if they are walking down the street and Neil, they might see Jack and they see the device and how he's using that to talk and make a comment like, what's wrong with him? Something like that, that children are not coming from a bad place. They just might see something for the first time and try and process it. How do you teach them after that? What language to use, how to make that a teachable moment so that they learn to become inclusive if that's not something their school's offering or their community's offering, because it all starts at home?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for us, we tried to say, nothing's necessarily wrong with him. He's just different than you, and this is why. And then obviously with the device, that could open up a conversation. That's how we usually try to talk with other kids to kind of change that language around so that it's more inviting, because they don't mean anything by it, but it opens up the conversation. And again, like I said before, kids are so much more honest and more open that you can have a dialogue, which is great.
And starts a conversation between you and your children. Jen, I'm curious if there's any language. I love how Neil reframed it from what's wrong with him to being different. And that actually our differences, and we have this conversation with our boys a lot, our differences are what make all of us so special, that this is actually a superpower for all of us. And so, Jen, I'm curious if you have any language that's helpful for parents to mirror back to their children how to be not only inclusive, but this whole-minded child that all of us are special in our own ways.
In the little person community, it is very offensive to use the word midget. That's an old-fashioned term that people do not use anymore. It's very offensive. You would refer to somebody as a person with dwarfism or a little person or just their name. Referring to them by their height is just, it's not necessary. The next step is getting rid of all the harmful language about any diagnosis.
That's why we're doing this episode, so that people can learn more. Nicole, how about you?
We talk a lot about people first language, exactly like Jennifer said. Regardless of the diagnosis, we've been around groups of kids with all different diagnoses. And in the beginning, I struggled the same. I didn't know how to refer to all these kids when I was trying to refer to their diagnosis. And I just kept coming back to the child that uses the wheelchair, the child that uses the device. This is a person that we're talking about. It's not just a diagnosis or a height or a disability that we're looking at. We're looking at a person, and then they might use X, Y, or Z to help them along, or there might be some other distinguishing factors, but people first language, I agree.
I love that. People first language. Jen, Nicole, Neil, I've learned so much. I'm excited to teach my boys about all of this. And I can tell you that our listeners have probably craved this information, because a lot of us want to do the right thing. Maybe we're just not informed. So in closing, we thought we'd hand the mic over to our real experts. As we wrap up, I'll let Wyatt, Ruby, and Jack take it from here.
Hi, I'm Ruby, and I love to cuddle. I want you to know that what makes you different makes you wonderful. Come say hi to me.
Hey there. My name is Jack. I'm 8 years old. My favorite TV show is Spider-Man.
Hi, my name is Wyatt, and what I want everyone to know is that we all have challenges. It really just matters how we overcome the challenge versus what the challenge is. Even though my challenges may look different than yours, we are all really more alike than different.
Jen, Nicole, Neil, I just want to thank you again for being here. I can tell you that I'm excited to impart so much of this, and also I know our listeners. So you taught us all, and I can tell you we'll never forget this conversation. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more about today's guests and to review the wonderful content from our now three completed seasons, head to choa.org/podcasts. That's choa.org/podcasts. I'm Lynn Smith, and this has been Hope and Will, a parenting podcast from Children's Healthcare of Atlanta.
This podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only. It is not to be considered medical advice for any particular patient. Clinicians must rely on their own informed clinical judgments when making recommendations for their patients. Patients in need of medical or behavioral advice should consult their family healthcare providers.